is not different, but this material world is simply a transformation of his different energy. Prasya Shakti Vividaiva Suyate. There are also other versions of this in the Vedas. Sarva Kalvidam Brahma. Matter and spirit are none different from the Supreme Brahman Bhagavan. Lord Sri Krishna confirms this statement in the Bhagavad Gita 7.4. May bina prakritir astada. Material energy is Krishna's energy, but it is separated from him. The spiritual energy is also his energy, but it is not separated from him. When the material energy is engaged in the service of the Supreme Spirit, so-called material energy is also transformed into spiritual energy. Just as an iron rod becomes fire when placed in contact with fire. When we can understand by an analytical study that the Supreme Personality Godhead is the cause of all causes, our knowledge is perfect. Simply understanding the transformations of different energy is partial knowledge. We must come to the ultimate cause. The knowledge of those who are not interested in knowing the original cause of all emanation is never perfect knowledge. There is nothing in the phenomenal world that is not produced by the supreme energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aromas from the earth are different scents, manufactured and used for different purposes. But the original cause is the earth, nothing else. A water pot made of earth can be used to carry water for some time. But ultimately the pot is nothing but earth. Therefore there is no difference between the pot and its original ingredient, earth. It is simply a different transformation of the energy. Originally the cause, or primary ingredient, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the varieties are only byproducts. In the Chandogya Upanishad it is stated, Yata sumye kena mritpindena sarvam mrinmayam vinyatam syat vacharumbanam vikaro namadeyam mritiketi eta satyam. If one studies the earth, he naturally understands the byproducts of the earth. The Vedas therefore enjoin, Yasmin vigyate sarvam eka vigyatam bhavate. If one simply understands the original cause, Krishna, the cause of all causes, then naturally everything else is understood, although it may be presented in different varieties. By understanding the original cause of different varieties, one can understand everything. If we understand Krishna, the original cause of everything, we do not need to separately study the subsidiary varieties. Therefore, from the very beginning, it is said, Satyam Param Dhimahi. One has to concentrate one's understanding on the Supreme Truth. Krishna or Vasudev, the word Vasudev, indicates the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes. Matstani Sarvabhutani Nachaham Tezavastitaha. This is a summary of phenomenal and nominal philosophy. The phenomenal world depends on the nominal existence. Similarly, everything exists by virtue of the potency of the Supreme Lord, although due to our ignorance, the Supreme Lord is not perceived in everything. Om Jnana Timirandasya Ginnandana Salakya Shakshura Militam Yantas Mai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukham Karochi Vachanam Pangam Nangayate Yat Kripatamahan Vandai Sri Gurun Dinatari Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudevi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is the philosophical understanding. Jadbharat is now instructing Maharaj Rahugana, and he's trying to expand his horizons by making him understand that the objects that we see in this material world are spiritual in origin, and that ultimately these are all transformations of the energies of Krishna. In that way, he's preparing the king to come to the understanding, Aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit. And not only I am spirit, but also to understand the relationship that is there with Krishna. How nitya nityanam chetanas chetanam eko bhavanam yuvidadatikanam. That there is amongst all eternals one eternal upon whom all other eternals depend, and that one eternal is supplying everything for all the other eternals. So, in this way, he is trying to point out, Jadbara, that there is an intimate relationship with the Supreme Lord, that everything that is manifest in this world is dependent on the Supreme Lord, and that ultimately that what remains is our relationship with Krishna. And that is the essence. And then, of course, what he is not yet touching upon is the variegatedness that exists within Krishna. Krishna's wonderful qualities, Krishna residing in the spiritual world, and how actually the relationship with Krishna is based on loving exchange, and that loving exchange is filled with rasa, and that is the essence. In the Krishna book, we're reading that the birds that are seated in the trees in Vrindavan are jumping from branch to branch. And these are actually philosophers, right? It's these philosophers are coming, these birds, who are jumping from branch to branch. We see that the residents of Vrindavan, who are considered to be on a higher plane, are not so concerned with philosophy, although they know philosophy. It is explained like this. The cowherd boys, for example, are very fond of Krishna and are playing. And sometimes when one sees these descriptions of these plays, an adult might think, little childish, the mind might just think a little childish. But then these cowherd boys are not so childish. For example, when the Vedic brahmanas are performing their sacrifices and so on, it turns out that the cowherd boys are extremely learned. Right? They are begging on behalf of Krishna and Balaram, and they are very expertly pointing out to the brahmanas how the procedures work and how it is fine in the interim state of the yajna to now start giving foodstuffs in charity. It's bona fide, authorized, and perfectly all right. So they're actually very deeply learned in understanding transcendental philosophy. But the essence of all philosophy is Krishna. There is no doubt. So there are these two elements, rasa and tattva, and both of them are essential. When we have only philosophy and focus only on tattva without understanding rasa, then it becomes very dry. When there is only rasa without understanding tattva, then we cannot fully relish that transcendental taste, because the tattva is giving us the complete understanding. Just like understanding who Krishna really is, how Krishna is a wonderful personality. It is said just Krishna's beauty is stunning. And everyone is just overwhelmed just seeing that beauty of Krishna. It doesn't matter, human beings, animals alike. This morning I was just hearing it somewhere on a tape where it said that the ladies... said, which lady in the universe would not be captured by the beauty of Krishna? And it says, and then it continued to say, even the cows are captured by the beauty of Krishna. Okay, I don't know if they were also counted in the category of ladies or if it was just expanded upon. But whatever may be, the beauty of Krishna is very captivating, very captivating. To all, not only to ladies, but to all. So that is pure ras. But that beauty of Krishna is becoming even greater if we understand parashya shakti vividai visruyate, how there are so many energies emanating from Krishna. Because we see how Krishna is just not limited to that manifestation in his form, but advaitam achyutam anadim anantarupam, unlimited forms, unlimited varieties of manifestations, and then all his different energies. So in this way, the opulences of Krishna are just unlimited, and it all adds to the glory of the personality of Krishna. There are some stories which are my favorites, and one of them is Krishna eating clay. I can't get enough of that story. It's always a thing. The coward boys complained that Krishna had eaten clay. Krishna said it was politics. He said, yes, we had some argument today in the forest. It was just sheer politics. And Mother Yasoda didn't believe him. She said, no, even your elder brother is saying so. Yeah, he joined them. It's like, yeah, shocking. And then Mother Yasoda had severe doubts. Then Krishna said, if you don't believe your own son, the word of your own son, then you can look in my mouth and see for yourself if I've eaten clay. And Mother Yasoda said, all right, open your mouth. And then he opened his mouth, and then the question is, well, what did she see there? Right? Did she actually see that Krishna had eaten clay or not? What did she see? She saw the entire universe and so on, right? Different planetary systems and so on. And she was, of course, shocked seeing that. And she saw herself also. And she saw Krishna. And she saw herself looking into the mouth of Krishna. And there she saw it again. More universes and so on. And this went many layers deep. Now, did she see clay or not? That's the question. Well, my answer to that is she saw lots of clay because she saw the whole planet Earth, right? So there's plenty of clay. So there was no doubt that there were remnants of clay in Krishna's mouth. But she saw more than that clay alone, right? The interesting thing was that she saw Krishna within the universe, right? And yet she saw that the whole universe was also within Krishna. So that's the most far out thing, because intellectually it doesn't match. It's not possible. Therefore, if one starts to philosophically think, well, if Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and then if there are unlimited universes emanating from him and all these energies, then you would think that God is Krishna plus all the energies. Right? That's what you'd say, Krishna plus energies equals God. That looks like the formula. Right? But that formula does not apply in that way. It is just Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And all the energies, what about the energies then? Yeah, they are within him, right? But they also exist separate from him. And he's also within the universe. So it's really something. Krishna is within the universe, and at the same time the universe within him. So that's such a far-out story. It is the story that really illustrates Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy of achincha, bheda, bheda, tattva, simultaneously, one and many. And achincha, inconceivably. Janmadi yasya yaton viyat itaratas chate swabhikya suratene brahmayiridaya adhikavya muyantiyat suryaha tejo varimadam yatavanimayo yatatsi sargamisa dhamna svena sadani rastakulgam satyam param dimahi. Which illustrates how everything is emanating from Krishna. He's the origin of everything. So that is basically what Jad Bharat is telling to Maharaj Rahugana. Now, the The devotees take it one step further and are not saying everything is emanating from Krishna, but everything is also existing for the purpose of Krishna. Everything is simply meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Sometimes direct, sometimes indirect. Like the suffering in this world is an indirect arrangement for the pleasure of Krishna. Does Krishna enjoy suffering in this world? No, Krishna doesn't, but Krishna is bringing living entities through that suffering back to enjoyment. Bringing them back to their eternal relationship with Him. And that is how it is. With time, we realize more and more the material world is simply a place for suffering. It is not a place to enjoy. Not at all. When we are young, we're hoping that it's going to happen. You know, hope that like somehow or other that it's really going to happen, and it doesn't. It just doesn't happen. I'm so sorry to say. But this is a sannyasi's business, right? When in the world, it is like everyone has dreams and walks around with balloons, and sannyasis walk around with pins. Their business is to pop the balloon of material existence, basically, to destroy the illusion. Jat Bharat is doing the same. He is also popping the illusion of the king, right, who was at the height of his enjoyment at king, and he's now making it very clear to you. Basically, in a philosophical way, he's telling him, you are nothing but dust. he's very direct. The king had the good fortune of good culture, although he was not very profound in his understanding of Vedic philosophy. At least he was part of a culture which was following Vedic philosophy, and the result was that the king had respect for saintly persons, and the king had fear of offending saintly persons. So on the strength of that, Jat Bharat was able to speak very boldly. Sometimes the point is made that a preacher should speak very boldly. And Prabhupada was an example of one who could speak very boldly. Very boldly. But when, for example, in Calcutta, there were Naxalites. Naxalites are a very violent type of terrorist type of people. Right? So, at one point, and they are communists, right? And so at one point, they were objecting against Prabhupada's programs because they felt that this religion is opium for the people. Yeah. And therefore, they came to, they had bomb threats for the Pandal programs, and they also came, and they were rowdy during programs. And Prabhupada agreed to meet with them. And everyone said, I mean, you know, police was saying, you know, better not, you know. But Prabhupada met with them, heard them out, and then explained to them how actually Krishna consciousness is about communism, right? Spiritual communism. And he convinced them that actually it was, that he was behind communism after all. Then there were no more problems with the Naxalites. But he was not confrontational then. Right? So Prabhupada was not, although he was bold, and although he was ready to stand up against opposition, it wasn't foolishly, it wasn't blindly. He was considering when to speak in a confrontational way, when to pacify, and so on. Right? So that is interesting. So Jat Bharat was a very bold preacher, extremely bold, and one might take inspiration from bold preachers like Jad Bharat. I mean, we have some other bold preachers in our tradition. For example, Prabodhananda Saraswati, who was a very dedicated follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was sometimes very, very bold, right? Speaking about to hell with this and to hell with that. Because his only interest was devotional service to Krishna. And that is our business. Our business is to speak the truth. But there is also a principle, satyam priyat, satyam bruhat, that the truth must be spoken in a palatable way, in a way that people can ultimately take it. We see that Prabhupada was able to say things and still people respected him for it. There's that story about a professor who was introduced by Ravindra Sarup to Prabhupada, a professor in Hinduism. And Prabhupada said, asked him straight away, what is the definition of Hinduism? The professor said, that is hard to say. And Prabhupada turns to Sarup Damodar, his disciple, and he says, my disciple, Sarup Damodar, is also a PhD. He says, Sarup Damodar, we asked for a definition of Hinduism, and the professor says it's hard to say. He said, what do we call that? Cheating, Srila Prabhupada. Yeah? He says, cheating. Prabhupada said, that's right. And then within minutes, seriously, within minutes, it came to a major argument between the professor and Prabhupada. A major argument. They were screaming at each other. And at one point, Brahmananda came and said, you'd better get out of here before you make more offenses. It's like, and you know, okay, looking at the size of Brahmananda and the serious look at his face, the professor retreated. So, I mean, what a way to treat a professor, a total nightmare, right? I mean, the communication department, you know, like, you can tell that story in the next communications meeting. That was inconceivable, but the most interesting part of the story is that about 20 years later, Ravindra Sarup bumped into this professor. So Ravindra Sarup, the professor said, oh, remember that time I met Bhaktivedanta Swami? It was like cringing. Oh no, now it's coming. And then the professor said, you know, he was right. Yeah, that was really interesting. So Prabhupada had this, when there's purity, one can be more bold. Yeah? And one who is not so pure cannot imitate. He cannot imitate in this way. So Jad Bharat's boldness was going hand in hand with his extraordinary purity and dedication. And therefore, Jad Bharat was speaking with the king, right, in quite a strong, chastising way. People might have gotten their head cut off for less in history of mankind. But Jad Bharat was also fearless, because Jad Bharat was living in his relationship with the Supreme Lord. And therefore he was not concerned, even if the king would cut his head. He knew that the soul cannot be cut to pieces. Nainam chindanti sastani, nainam dati pavaka. He knew the soul is cannot be affected. Therefore, he was completely transcendental. To such an extraordinary degree that he has become one of the personalities who is remembered in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is, besides giving us descriptions of the manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is also giving us various narratives of great perfect devotees who are 100% surrendered and completely on the transcendental platform, like Kunti Devi, who is praying, who is a mother with pure devotee sons, and who's saying, please cut these ties of affection that I have for my sons, because they interfere with the desire to simply just be absorbed in your service. So this is a devotee. A devotee is absorbed in remembering and glorifying Krishna and cannot get enough. Wants just more and more, and just anything else gradually has to go. We find that also in the description of Bhishma Dev. It is said that Bhishma Dev at one point is mentioning that there was no more room for any other relationship than the relationship with Krishna. Yeah. Because it just could not, there was not enough space in his heart to accommodate all the feelings that were there towards Krishna. Therefore, all other things just had to go. And it's like, not that he had no appreciation for everything else, but of course, aradhanam sarvesam Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat paratram devi tadiyanam samarjanam. There is also the tadiya, those things that are related with Krishna. Therefore also devotees. And therefore, not only the relationship with Krishna, but also the relationship with the devotees. And that relationship is also going deeper and deeper, because it is through the devotees that we find Krishna. It's very nice that Srila Prabhupada sometimes took this extremely humble position when he was asked if he had many disciples. Prabhupada said, no, actually, I don't have any disciples. Krishna sent me many spiritual masters. Right? So, how can one realistically say something like that? How can one even say that? How can one see every Vaishnava as a teacher? Well, there is truth in that, and because every individual is unique, and every individual has some unique strength in surrendering to Krishna. One cannot just think, oh, I am all having all the chips, you know what I'm saying? One may sit on the raised seat, but that doesn't mean, and be in the position of the teacher. But actually, everyone has something to teach, because everyone has a unique way of surrendering and of serving Krishna. So, in that way, we can see that the advanced Vaishnava can look at any devotee and say, oh, yes, this devotee is my teacher, how to serve Krishna. So Prabhupada took that wonderful position. And taking that principle, we can see how through every devotee we can deepen our connection with Krishna. And that should be the mood in relating to the Vaishnavas. So in this very philosophical part of the Bhagavatam, which is really establishing the tattva, here in this verse, which is establishing the tattva of eternity, the principle of eternity, and how all the temporary manifestations in the material world are just transformations of the eternal. That is the foundation. But behind that, yes, we see that all that energy is simply meant to increase the pleasure of Krishna. And that is what it is used for. And therefore, when we come to Vrindavan, we get a a perfect manifestation of that. And therefore everything within Vrindavan, every aspect of Vrindavan is meant for the pleasure of Krishna. There's nothing in Vrindavan that is not for the pleasure of Krishna. Because that is Vrindavan. And when we go to the holy Dham and when we think that we see something there that may be not for the pleasure of Krishna, for example, the Vrindavan Mafia, to name something, then we should understand, no, that is the covering. That's the covering of Vrindavan, which is like a protective shield. I've thought about that mafia in Vrindavan because I met a few mafiosis in my days. And I was thinking that it's all Krishna's arrangement. Because one cannot... in this age of Kali, the devotees are not naturally humble. In this age of Kali, there are so many devotees that come with their wealth and that flash of their opulence. And then there are gundas. And they will take care of that very expertly. So in this way, the rich and proud either run away or they lose their wealth or whatever. One has to simply, it is another mechanism to protect the Dham from becoming too corrupted by greed and so on. So ultimately one can see in the covering, this what covers the Dham. The Dham is so transcendental that one cannot by any means estimate its opulence. We remember that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was sometimes disclosing such big plans, huge development plans, big temples, this and that, and then the devotee said, this is wonderful, but how are we going to pay for all of this? And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, he said, simply one brick from the spiritual world will do. Just one brick will do. And anyway, but still, his managers had difficulties in funding all his plans. So he wanted to have that Gorakund, which is right next to the yoga pit. They were trying to get that land, and then because there was not so much cash in the mat, they decided to sell another property of land, right? And in the end, it became a swap to swap that land for another piece of land. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was upset about that because he said, "How could you get rid of that other plot of land?" Right? He said, "I also had many plans for that. That is also a great and transcendental place where many, you know, amazing things have taken place." And he had a plan to just reveal the transcendental nature of every little corner of the Dham. Yeah. That was his plan. So it's very nice when we think about that. So the reason why I'm entering into discussions of the Holy Dham is because Jad Bharat is just only giving part of the full picture at this stage of the narration. He's basically trying to detach the king from his false identification with the body, which is very necessary, but is certainly not enough. It is about being the eternal servant of Krishna, and it is about exploring the qualities of Krishna. And therefore we see that Bhagavad Gita is thoroughly establishing in various ways that we are not the body and eternal spirit soul. And Srila Prabhupada kept repeating it throughout. Right? And sometimes devotees felt like, another, you're not the body class. But it is so difficult not to
identify with the body. So extremely difficult. So on the one hand, we are always philosophically reminding ourselves we're not the body and so on in various ways. And on the other hand, we are simultaneously exploring the spiritual wealth of this earth, of Krishna's eternal pastimes and abode in the spiritual world. Like we can see that Prabhupada also quite early gave the Krishna book with that idea that we would explore. So both are required side by side. Side by side. Bhagavad Gita and Krishna book. Krishna book is Bhagavatam. But we need both. Then we are safe on the spiritual platform. In the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, there's a description about a sannyasi who previously was a wealthy and miserly brahmana. And throughout his life, he was holding on to his wealth, and he was never charitable very much. And as a result, he accrued a certain amount of karma. And when he was a sannyasi, he had to endure a lot. He had to endure a lot. And he was being harassed by many people. And there's a verse, well, people used to sort of steal his danda, which is like kind of a real annoying thing, you know, I must say. Not only that, there's even some people, even while he was chanting, they were joking at him, laughing at him, making fun at him, throwing things at him. And someone even urinated upon him. And then there's that verse, that whether one is spat upon, urinated upon, or beaten, or in any other way mistreated, one should always keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. So to keep ourselves safe on the spiritual platform, just a philosophical outlook is not enough. Because it said, Balavan Indriyan Gramo Vidvam Samapikarsati, the senses are so strong that even a man of learning is struggling. But when we become thoroughly attracted to Krishna, then it is Param Drishta Nivartate, then the higher taste develops, and then we are safe. Therefore, it is important to also explore the wonderful glories of Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, associates, and so on. Because all these things will give us the strength of higher taste, which is ultimately... but for moments... when we are not situated in higher taste, then we have philosophy. Then immediately, no, I'm not this body. No, therefore, it doesn't make sense to identify with this material desire because it's related to the body. It has nothing to do with me. And in that way, one again finds shelter in philosophy and then returns to the service of Krishna, into glorifying Krishna and exploring his unlimited qualities. And in this way, a Vaishnava is safe on the spiritual platform. Any questions, any comments? Okay, the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya in the Praman Kanda says that in the age of Kali, the old Tirthas and Dhams, including Vrindavan Dham, will become less manifest. Not that it will be disappearing. It cannot disappear. It's eternal. The Dham will be always there. Even when the whole universe disappears, the Dham is still there. Not with all the rickshaws, but you know, but the eternal aspect of the Tao will remain. But it will become less manifest, whereas Sri Dhammayapur Navadvip Dham will become more and more manifest. That is Navadvip Dhammahatmya Bhakti Vinod Thakur. That's where it is. But Vrindavan's still there. They may have put asphalt on top of the Parikram mark, right? But it's still the same Parikram mark, right? We can still go around Vrindavan. They may have, you know, put like holes. They may have made whole suburbs which look like Delhi, right? Now in Vrindavan, and you know, like, yeah, when I first started coming to Vrindavan, the road that led into Vrindavan was very narrow. There were hardly any cars. You know, one or two cars a day, that was it. You know, there were no shops. Our temple was sort of a little isolated, yeah. And you know, because after us there was nothing. All just open land. People were worried about developing this Ramanreti area because it was isolated, not secure. Yeah. Now it's like boxed in, you know, on all sides, we're boxed in. So, becoming more urbanized and so on. And with that, right, a lot of mundane influence is covering the Dham, but underneath the same Dham. So, by chanting Hare Krishna and by devotional service, we can still fully take advantage of Vrindavan Dham, and that will never be gone. So devotees will always worship Vrindavan Dham, but it may become less and less manifest, and certain things may become forgotten, just like after Krishna, so many places forgotten, and then Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uncovering Radha Kund and so on. So sometimes the Dham becomes covered, and its transcendental nature no longer known to people. That's happening. We're seeing it happening. Where's the Krishna Balaram tree on Ramanreti? It's only a memory now. And all the peacocks that were on Ramanreti, you know? Every evening you would go chant japa at Ramanreti opposite of the Krishna Balaram tree, and like 40, 50 peacocks. I used to finish my rounds there every day, sitting on the wall. It's gone. What's left of Dhavanala Kund, where Krishna drank water after the forest fire. We used to swim there every day. It's gone. Vrindavan's keeping us alive. But yes, I mean, one of our services is to try and be transparent to the Dham. So first, like the mission of the Krishna Balaram Mandir is to be transparent to the Dham. Srila Prabhupada said that in the Krishna Balaram Mandir he wanted 25 devotees who were just like the Goswamis. And it is by being a servant of the Goswamis that one can be transparent to the Dham. And then that expands beyond the boundary walls of the Krishna Balaram Mandir to Vrindavan Dham. But we also understand that it's not within our hands. You know, Govardhan is decreasing. And the way devotees are taking Govardhan Shilas now from all over the world, Govardhan is decreasing a lot faster. Right? So one day, you know, I mean, you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya walked over the road and that all the devotees took some dust and basically that they took the whole road home. Yeah? You can read things like that. Well, we're taking the whole devotees, and though everyone wants a Govardhan Shila, it goes very fast now. Govardhan. Yeah? At one, getting smaller and smaller. So one day, these things are destined. But yes, as long as we can keep the glories of Vrindavan Dham within known in this world, that's our duty. But our primary duty is to reveal the glories of Sri Dhammayapur. There's no doubt about that. But Prabhupada said, these two dhams, right? He said, if all the temples in the world will close, even if Radhadesh will close, he said, but let not an inch, you know, of these projects in the dham deteriorate. Not an inch. To look at all, yeah. Nectar of instruction, we should always reside in Vrindavan. If you read the whole verse, then it particularly says by hearing and chanting. By hearing, chanting, and remembering the pastimes of Krishna, one should always reside in Vrindavan. So, you cannot buy a ticket to Vrindavan and go to Vrindavan. You can only enter into Vrindavan through devotional service. Jiva Goswami explains that Vrindavan is a state of consciousness, not just a location. So that is also to be considered. Still, we should go to Vrindavan. But then in Madhya Lila chapter 2, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the teachings to Sanatana Goswami, Srila Prabhupada explains the Prabhudotta Desh. And he's explaining that the Prabhudotta Desh is the place that is given to us by the spiritual master. And that is even more important than being in Vrindavan, is being in his Prabhudotta Desh. So, in this, but we should definitely take advantage of the holy dhams. Some devotees, they haven't been there for 20 years. Whenever we can, at least once a year. Prabhupada desired, he made a festival in Vrindavan with that idea that he said the devotees will be the whole year in the Western world because they're still not conditioned. They may get some contamination of being in that mundane association and then come for purification to the Dham once a year. And for that, we should make a very nice festival. So that was the purpose of the Mayapur Vrindavan festival. So we should try and keep a close connection with the Dham. But if we all go sit in the Dham, then what will become of the rest of the world? So that's not possible. So therefore the spiritual masters, they go traveling around the world, and like when the sannyasis would come to Vrindavan, then Prabhupada would not even say, welcome. No, Prabhupada would just say, when are you leaving? So, with the idea that the preaching must go on in the world. Are we finished?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, like, in my explanation, I spoke about the need for purity, and that's a principle, but it's not, there's a need for purity to go hand in hand with boldness, yeah? Because we see that ultimately the truth has to be spoken. Yeah. One can try and present it in a palatable way, yeah? Very palatable, but the core has to still be the truth. Yeah? Otherwise, one can be very careful to not say to not disclose the things that are more difficult for people to accept. But if we never mention them, then they'll never accept them either. Like the four regulative principles may not be so popular, so you hide them. You know, you don't say no illicit sex, right? That one you hide behind your back, right? Because you're afraid people will run away. But how long can you hide it? At one point, we have to face it, and we have to help people to digest it. So boldness is required. We can't get around it. The truth has to be spoken. So, at the same time, if we have no experience and no purity, then, and we just indiscriminately, you know, like start speaking without any sensitivity, then our preaching may also not be successful. Therefore, both are required, that a boldness, sometimes tact, but and purity is the factor which empowers us to conquer people. Yeah. So experience is another factor. Yeah. We may not see what with time. It's not up to us to start thinking we are so pure. But with time, we can recognize that we have received a lot of mercy. And in a way, a lot of purity has been invested in us. Not that we are pure, still not pure. But all these good instructions, all these good examples, all these things we've read, all these things we somehow or other heard for just being in the Hare Krishna movement. So through the Hare Krishna movement, a lot has been invested in us. And if we just take shelter of what has been invested in us, then we have purity. Yeah. And then we can act like that. Not that we think, I am pure. Yeah. So that's important. I mean, you get that dilemma that as you're getting senior, that you are meant to give spiritual leadership. And at the same time, you're meant to become more humble and think, I'm not qualified. So we can be resolved by seeing, I've been invested with all this mercy. So I can't be miserly and sit on it. It's not my credit, you know, it's just mercy. But I still got it. And so now I have to pass that on. Therefore, over time, one can pass on the pure mercy, even when one is not so pure.
Lost.
There's a conversation between Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg, and it's about deity worship. And Allen Ginsberg raises the point that in various religious traditions, they are objecting against worshiping the deity because they say, like, it's material. How can you engage stone, you know, worship a form of stone which is made of the material energy? And Prabhupada simply You know, and Allen Ginsberg was sort of rolling up his sleeves, getting ready for a debate. And Prabhupada simply said, material energy, matter doesn't exist. There is no matter. It is all spiritual. And by connecting matter with spirit, we can reveal the Hari Sambandha Vastu. Hari Sambandha means the connection with Hari, and Vastu means the form. So we got to discover within everything simply how we can connect it with Krishna, the manifestation in which it's connected with Krishna. Yeah. So it's already Krishna's energy, spiritual, and now we just connect it with Krishna. Then we understand the proper use. Just like a bottle of whiskey, right? What do you do with it? Well, when it's if there's no disinfectant, then whiskey does the job. Yeah? So there's nothing wrong with whiskey. It's okay for the outside, not for the inside. You see? So it has an application even in the service of Krishna. Yeah? So when we are intelligent, we can see how to engage things in the service of Krishna. So all material things, that which is entangling us and binding us in the material world, when engaged in the service of Krishna, is becoming the very cause of our liberation. How amazing it is. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.